This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 50, End of Year Extravaganza. Coming up on the last cricket show of 2015, we talk about how the year went for us all and what we're looking forward to next year. We also help a couple of players with a couple of questions. One guy wants to know a little bit about off-spin tactics, and our friend Mode wants to know a little bit about fast bowling technique and chest drive. Find out what that is on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's the last one of the year, and it's your guide to better cricket. That doesn't matter who you are, where you are, or whether you celebrate Christmas or not. We've got another half an hour or so of the Series 6 of the show before we head off into a little break before the new year. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things. And helping me to help you are two cricket coaches who I'm sure have done all their Christmas shopping and are completely ready for the festive period. First of all, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello, how are you? You all festive?
Oh, yes. Got the food in the fridge and ready to go. Of course, this show, we record this show a few days before, but this show is going to be going out on Christmas Day. So, Merry Christmas.
I fully expect everybody to be listening in as soon as it hits the airwaves, mate.
Well, what else are you going to be doing? I mean, watching Doctor Who?
Correct.
And waiting patiently for his turn to pick up a present and open it. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. Happy Christmas as well, obviously.
Yes, happy Christmas. And
absolutely. I imagine all plans for food have gone on delay. Everyone's huddled round
the wireless.
An iPad or something like that, and they're all listening in intently.
Yeah, just like those pictures you see from the 1920s.
I wonder how many people are listening to this with more than three people fast asleep in the room because they've had too much to eat and drink.
Well, if you are, please write in. So let's talk cricket, and I thought we could look back and we could look ahead. So my first question to you this portion of the show is what was your highlight of the year, cricketing highlight of the year, I suppose? It can be personal, it can be someone you coached, it can be something at the top end of the game or something else which is completely left field, whatever you like. But what is your favourite moment of 2015?
Crikey, it's been a few, to be honest. I was actually thinking about this when I was driving yesterday, and there's been a whole heap of things that had happened. But I suppose from a really selfish perspective, the under-15s, Millfield under-15s winning the national T20 was really good fun to be a part of and to watch from the sidelines. So that was good. And then obviously last week or so, been working with Gary Kirsten at school, who has just been absolutely magnificent. So again, you know, just as everybody listening in here, I'm always wanting to learn, and I certainly learned a hell of a lot spending 3 days with him.
What about you, Lavers? What's been your highlight?
I'm probably going to go down the selfish route as well, I suppose. Really.
Why not?
The highlight would be our under-17 boys and being there when they won the National Cup for in their 40-over comp, which was absolutely brilliant. And the pleasing thing about it was, again, I pretty much did nothing on the day, which is always the kind of rewarding thing where you realise that you're no longer needed on match day because the boys can manage themselves. So apart from kind of setting up a little bit of warm-up and making sure the boys got there, I really didn't have to do a lot. And that was really great to watch them manage each other, them talk each other through difficult situations. The senior players look after a couple of the younger lads when it got down to a tough situation and pretty much let them do it themselves. And they did, and it was brilliant to watch. So just great fun day. Really good to see them celebrating and enjoying a really positive cricket experience that's come after a lot of hard work.
I think for me, it's been the experience of starting a new club. And it's not been the most fantastic of seasons, but I think the highlight is definitely getting a fresh set of eyes on things and seeing how a different club does things and a different part of the country does things. And also being able to really because of the indoor facilities at west of Scotland, been really able to dig deep into the pitch vision well and get loads of information from that. I think probably the highlight for me is a number. It's 8,381. And that number is the number of balls that have been bowled on pitch vision this year, on my pitch vision this year. So I'm quite happy with that. That's not bad. That's not a bad start, is it?
That's good.
And presumably that's only going upwards next year, is it? Because
yep,
you didn't do a full year at West of Scotland, am I right there?
Well, it started in April, yeah. So
yeah, so you've done so there's a massive pre-season chunk there, which is probably going to add another couple of thousand at least, isn't it?
Oh, well, definitely. And in this period at the end of the season up until the end of the year, you know, that's been really busy as well with loads of stuff. So it's very exciting from both for both my sort of cricket badger side and for my geeky side. So that's
what do you think that you've got from that that you wouldn't have had if you didn't have pitch vision? So are there things you've done differently that you've got because it's there? And I imagine people turn up to sessions more consistently just because there's that kind of facility available.
Absolutely. I've really noticed a lot more enthusiasm. It's hard to judge whether that's just down to pitch vision or not, but we have either run or guys just organising amongst themselves pretty much four sessions a week right up until Christmas. And that's a real, you know, and these are club guys who normally, you know, come the end of the season, you don't see them again until late April sometimes. Yeah. And we've been having four sessions a week of different ages and different guys. So the enthusiasm is definitely up there. I think a lot of the time that in itself, that motivation is good. But also a lot of the time, what the data actually shows is what you probably already know. There's no great surprises in there, but it does show you in a hard and fast way, yes, we are doing the right thing because we're trying to do this, and this is the most effective way for you to bat, this is the most effective way for you to bowl. So it's subtle things, it's very subtle things, but having all that information there and being able to dig through it and discover things and motivate people with league tables of, you're the fastest bowler, you're the most accurate bowler, you one who got the most turn, you're the one who's bowled the most balls. It's massively motivating. You make something competitive, and people throw themselves into it, don't they? So I'm delighted with the way that Pitch Vision has worked for us this year, and the way that the club has accepted me as a coach and just fully thrown themselves into it, because that wouldn't happen everywhere.
No, it's not easy, is it, stepping into a new environment, probably as a Welshman stroke Englishman, whatever you are nowadays, David, up in Scotland. You know, that's not going to be easy either. And I had to win people over when I went over to Ireland. And I'm sure that's been the case for you. But, you know, fantastic that they've all begin to see some real culture and results on the field that will pick up as a result of your hard work.
Yeah, we better. I'm going to start knocking some heads together.
That's the way, mate.
Tell them to get on with it. That's the Garraway method.
Doesn't work everywhere, that one.
Okay, let's finish up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question. Your best players have to unite and inspire the group. Otherwise, they'll divide the group.
No.
No.
Second question. The best training is tougher, more stressful, and scarier than games.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now let's do what's traditional at this time, and that is to answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show. We're still getting lots of questions being sent in over the festive period. And do keep sending your questions in while we're off, because we do look at them all and we do line them up for hopefully being able to answer them sometime in the new year. So please send in your question. And if you didn't manage to get it asked this year, please feel free to send it again in the next round, in the next series. And The best question of the week also wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Rohit sent in his question. And Rohit has sent in quite a brief question, but I thought perhaps we could expand onto it into the tactical side of it, perhaps. And Rohit says, I'm an off-spinner. What six deliveries should I bowl in an over? So, suspiciously simple question, but I think it brings in sort of tactical thinking. So maybe we can talk a bit about that.
Well, I mean, the short answer for you is a 240-mile-an-hour leg break.
Yeah.
But if you can't do that, then I think it's really very, very important that you sum up a number of things before you start to construct your watch play, or coached, or stood alongside, has got a plan when they enter the over, and that is that plan is a starting point for any changes ball to ball which come along as a result of numerous. You've bowled a few overs, that your body's ready. You've got accustomed to the pitch. You've got a pretty good idea of what the game circumstance is, and you're trying to put that over together. I'd suggest that before you walk up to your mark to deliver the first ball, you've got a pretty good idea of what the plan is, where the game is. So the first thing that most great players go to at the start of any over is, what's their best ball? So what is the best ball that you can bowl? What's your stop ball? What's your, ultimately to get it in and around the top of off stump or the top of inside of off stump, is probably the best starting point for you to go for. And whether you're an off spinner or a fast bowler, most of the greats have done that pretty well. Getting that first ball, getting the semblance of control, putting the pressure on the batter, and that's the starting point. And then from that point onwards, unless you're right at the back end of a game and somebody's trying to haul you out of the park, that's pretty much going to stand up over the course of most of the cricket you play. And then if you talk to Glenn McGrath, then you just repeat that six times, but it's not always as easy as that for everybody. And also sometimes a batter might decide that actually that consistency he'll start to use against you as well. So I would say that for at least, two balls, I would go with that stock delivery, whatever it may be in your repertoire. Get in and around the top of off stump, just inside off stump, and crack on from there. And then the middle part of the over, especially if you kept the same guy on strike, if you got a couple of dot balls out, then you can start to think about trying to dismiss that person.
Getting in and getting out of the over, getting that first ball and that last ball right, so it's a dot, or maybe a single if it's towards the end of a limited over game. That's a real that's something I've heard from more than one person is a really sort of strong way to go about constructing an over and in constructing a spell, Lavis.
Yeah, I think some people can look at a spell and it's quite easy to be a bit overwhelmed by the fact you're going to bowl maybe six or seven or eight overs or even more and working out how they're going to fit together. But if you can break it down into those overs and think about how you're going to start an over, how you're going to finish an over, how you're going to control what the batsman's going to do, how you're going to control what the ball's going to do, then you start to have a little bit more awareness of how you're getting from ball one to ball 60, as it might be in a one-day game, or how are you going to start producing some pressure and some wicket-taking deliveries rather than just being a little bit disjointed in your approach. Certainly getting in and getting out of overs, I remember that the bit of work I did over the years with Terry Jenner was always really great, that he always talked about that kind of stuff and trying to secure the first two balls of the over. And then when you're ahead, trying to make sure you stayed ahead and make sure you won the over and you were then ahead of the game for the next over or for the next guy coming in, and you were giving your partner down the other end an opportunity where you already had a bit of pressure on the opposing player. So, massively important to construct that. I would say it's something you probably don't just want to do individually, something you want to do with your partner down the other end, something you want to do with the guys in the field so they're aware of what you're trying to do. So there's a lot more to it than just the way you bowl. It's how you play as a group. But yeah, ultimately, if everyone buys into that, you've got a pretty good chance of building pressure and taking wickets.
One thing I've noticed with the guys that I work with, especially the spinners, it seems, is that they are good at knowing what their stock ball is, and you know, it's variable how often that they can hit their stock ball in the right place. But they know what it is, and they know what they're trying to do. They don't necessarily have a plan when something happens, which is when the stock ball isn't working. So I was talking to one of our spinners yesterday, actually, and we were talking about situations where he doesn't know what to do, and he gets confused, and he ends up bowling poorly. And the two situations that we discussed were when someone really goes after him and is succeeding, what does he need to do? How does he need to keep his mind clear? And the other thing is when someone starts sweeping him. So he's bowling his length ball, his length leg break, and someone is just very comfortably sweeping him. How does he need to respond to that as well? So he's gone away to think about that. And then when we start again in the new year, he's going to bowl to some more than one plan. Keep it simple as we can, because you can't account for every circumstance. But if you've got those three, for example, those three scenarios, you stock ball the guy who's sweeping you and the guy who's going after you and succeeding, then you are that's going to put you in a much more strongly confident position to know what you need to do under that pressure. I think that's all part of it as well, isn't it? Being under the pressure of the match.
Yeah, very much so. And the more clarity you have when you're under pressure, the better. We talked a lot about pressure last week, both from a bowling and a batting perspective with Gary Kirsten and around those sessions. And it was ultimately going back to what you know. If your stop ball isn't working, as you say, then what is your go-to ball? What's your next ball that you go to? You know, have you got a good Yorker, which is a ball which is incredibly powerful? Have you got a really good slower ball? Because you can set some fantastic fields to a slower ball. And that confidence that you get from delivering your slower ball into the right space with the right field for a couple of balls then might reignite your confidence to be able to bowl that stop ball getting in around the top of middle and off stump. So sometimes getting your secondary skill, your secondary delivery right, can actually ignite some confidence that then goes back into bowling as you normally do. And the other thing you've got to consider is if you can get a bloke off strike that maybe has lined up your stop ball and bowl at the other guy, then it's rare that you get two batters who are absolutely smoking the top of middle and off stump delivery out of a park. You know, bowl a ball into the hip. Mark Robinson, who's just taken over as the England women's coach now, always talked to me about the fact that one of the most important balls to bowl as a seamer is when you've got fine leg back and you've got deep backward square leg back, is the ability to hit the bloke in the thigh pad, get him either off strike with a clip down the fine leg or to backward square leg or a leg by into that area and then bowl at the other bloke. And that's, you know, it's a skill to be able to deliver that in the same way as it's a skill to be able to hit the top of off stump.
Oh yes, but you know, anything leg stump line, you know, in limited over cricket now, you know, anything that doesn't basically hit the batsman is a wide, isn't it? So you've really got to be on the money when you go for that option.
Yeah, you know, but the best bowlers in the world can do it, because the best bowlers are sure that they want to be bowling at not the best batter in the world as much as possible, particularly in a one-day game. And that's something I think in all of our levels of playing cricket, the ability to get somebody off strike with the minimal amount of fuss to bowl at somebody out is crucial. And certainly one of the reasons why the under-15 side was so successful this year was that they worked out that once they got one or two batters out, then there was probably only one other batter in the team who was going to destroy them or had the opportunity to destroy them. And what we did in probably the biggest game of the year was make sure that the strong hitter didn't face very many balls in the middle. And it was about managing that situation rather than necessarily bowling absolute jaffers to get people out. It was just a case of keeping the best batter off strike. And that's got to be the same in most of the games of limited over cricket that we see around the world.
Yeah, yeah. So going back to the question, I guess the six deliveries is a bowler of the six deliveries that he feels like he can bowl, and he is confident that he's going to pull off in the circumstances.
Well, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with that. And but it's always, as you said earlier, always good to have a backup as well. So whether it's a Yorker, which is obviously the backup ball, isn't it? It's the one that everybody strives for, but very few get. Whether it's being able to hit somebody in the thigh pad to get them off a strike, whether it's been able to deliver a slower ball with an appropriately set field. So if somebody is going to maximise on it, then they've got to hit it one hell of a way and hit it very cleanly. Whatever it is, trying to find a way through that is all about having the clarity of what you're going to deliver, what field you're going to deliver it to. And if you could do that, then you'll probably find that you're going to grow in confidence and get better results.
Yeah, because as soon as you panic there, then you really are, you're defaulting into panic mode, and the chances of you being able to succeed in that situation are very low, aren't they? So I'll just wang it down there, see what happens. That's, you might be lucky, but if someone's just smashed you, it's unlikely, isn't it?
It's, yeah, absolutely.
Next question is from Mode. And Mode says, I know Mode, we've been speaking on Facebook a couple of times, so I know he's a fast bowler, and he's had many a technical question about the slingy bowling action, but the one that interested me that I thought we could talk about was this one. And he says, what is chest drive? So when it comes to chest drive, maybe we can give a little bit of a primer and see how it fits into the bowling action as a whole and how it can help bowlers.
Okay, so... But I'm trying to picture a couple of examples of people who do and don't have chest drive. So who would be a good example? Jimmy Anderson, Gareth, would you say, is someone who drives that chest forwards really well?
Yeah, not bad at all. Brodie does it pretty well.
Yeah,
as well.
And I then...
The best one over the years for me, and the most obvious one, would be Brett Lee.
Yeah, brilliant. Really good. And then if we were to go the other way... For whatever reason, I want to say Angus Fraser quite early on, of someone who doesn't necessarily have that mobility in the trunk that really snaps forwards. Anyone else you can throw at me there, Gareth or Dave?
Me.
I might be doing Angus Fraser a massive disservice there, but he would be one that jumps out. Have you got any more, David, that you can think of?
I guess. You want to think of guys with a little bit more of a classical action that are sort of, everything flows a little bit more than that great big pull of the chest towards the batsman. Yeah, I can't think of anyone who's particularly poor at it, or as you said, like Brett Lee's the classic example for pretty much any part of the bowling action, isn't he? So,
I think on that there's guys down the years, for those that have got memories longer than mine, will remember somebody I played with a couple of times, and he coached me a lot, a guy called Tim Tremlett, who was incredibly accurate as a bowler, bowled from the top of his height. He would be somebody who I wouldn't call it poor chest drive. It's just something that he wasn't trying to achieve, because he was trying to hit the ball in and around a good length and build up pressure in that way. In the same way as somebody like Derek Shackleton years ago, and we're talking a lot of years ago, who got thousands of wickets in Championship cricket, would not be interested in driving his chest to get that extra pace, because the game was a bit different back then, and it was about hitting a coin on a length and making the ball hop and skip and jump from that, really. So, so chest drive is something which has become more prevalent, I suppose, as the wickets have got flatter and around the world, which is generally what's happened at the top levels of a game.
Well, I think as you say there, the increasing requirement for pace requires more joints in the body, or more parts of the body to flex and move towards the target to generate that extra pace. And it might be that if you look at international cricket now, that it requires an element of high pace largely to get people to play at that level anyway. So we probably don't see a lot of people without it. Whereas if you think about people play at a lower level, it might be one of those key areas that isn't quite so strong. We talk a lot about the tent pegs type of drills on here, which are pretty rewarding for most people that use them. And I think that that pulling motion and that drive forwards of the chest within those is a really good way to kind of simulate it and get the feel for it and get a bit of an understanding and get some repetitions of that body flexing forwards towards the target and pulling that chest forwards. So introducing it into a part of your regular training is a really simple but effective way to start teaching your body a new movement, if it is a new movement, of that body driving forwards or reaffirming an existing movement, which is ultimately going to help with pace. And if it's done well, can minimise the disruption of balance as well, because the more momentum we've got going towards a target, the less likely it's to be disrupted in a different direction as well. So ultimately, something's adding us pace, isn't it? But also, it probably gives us a lot more in terms of balance and control if we get it right.
And just to try and describe that, Gareth, what is it that you're trying to achieve when you have a powerful chest drive?
Well, I think there's two ways of going about this, David. The first one is what causes it, because you've got to have things happening in your base that allow the forces to work and the braking forces to work in an appropriate fashion. Because ultimately, what you're looking for, and Brett Lee was that image that I had in my head when I read the question, is you want to see that the chest driving towards the target over a very stationary base. And obviously that stationary base, we talk about it all the time, is getting a heel land and using the whole of your foot to take the forces from the ground up a brace front leg into the hips. And what happens there, we get the vertical transfer of energy going up the kinetic chain, but also we get a braking force. And if you can imagine a car driving along at say 30 miles an hour and then slamming the brakes on, the back end of the car will rise up slightly because the tyres at the front have come to a screeching halt. And this is exactly what happens when somebody throws or bowls. They put their foot into the ground, they brake themselves, and force goes upwards up the kinetic chain that we talk about most weeks on here. But also a force goes backwards as well. And the result of that is that the torso and the chest get catapulted towards the target when we throw or when we bowl. That is pretty much the motion. Now, if somebody bends their front knee and they're not getting quite so significant force going vertical and also back as well at the same time, then obviously you're less likely to get a chest drive. The benefit of a chest drive is then the torso takes over and starts moving towards the target, and it delays the bowling arm from coming over. And the bowling arm or throwing arm comes over as late as possible with all of that energy running up through it, and it goes at its optimal pace. So that's the benefit of having a chest drive. But it comes from a way that you land and stop yourself and brake yourself at the bottom of the kinetic chain. If you can do that really efficiently and really effectively, then instead of having to throw or bowl with the right shoulder, in my case as a right-handed bowler and thrower, which I often felt when I did both of those things, we're actually spreading all of the workload across the whole of our body, our torso and our chest come into play, and then the last bit of the chain is that arm coming over and that hand coming over and the ball coming out as a pretty hot projectile going in the direction that we want it to go.
Now, is it something that you would specifically coach if someone hasn't got it, or if someone wants to improve on it?
Well, first thing I'd do is if that person was wanting to be a faster bowler, if that person was wanting to be a harder and faster thrower, and that was their goal, then yes, and they didn't have the chest drive, then I would look to try and incorporate it. And often I would look beneath them in terms of the way that they're landing, the way that they're holding, their leg strength and all of those things, to see where that broke down, because it's often underneath the chest that those challenges and those issues that stop that from happening occur. So that would be my starting point. Yeah, but again, if I go back to the Tim Tremletts and the Derek Shackletons of this world, if somebody says to me, I want to be as good a bowler as I can be in club cricket, and I want to play for a long time, I want to bowl medium pace and get it in and around the top of off stump, and I want to get, you know, 40, 50 wickets a year, and my ambitions go no higher than playing club cricket, then it wouldn't necessarily be something that I would look to introduce, because we've got to make sure as coaches that our interventions are geared around that person's aspirations, rather than having a model of what we want something to look like with every single cricketer that we work with. Because, you know, as Sam will know in his working environments, and as you know in your working environments, David, you know, we've got people there that are there for different reasons. They want to end up in different places within cricket. So we have to factor all of that in as well.
It's the last soapbox of the year, so no pressure for Sam Lavery as he steps up on the soapbox for 60 seconds of uninterrupted chat. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, well, given that I'm someone who's got a bit of a cold at the moment, I always find that when I am a little bit ill, which fortunately isn't too often, it really makes me appreciate what I feel like when I feel well. And how good it is to feel good about what you're doing and not be restricted by your health. And I think that that's something that I often transfer over into cricket, and it makes me think about what it's like when you're fit and when you're able to do everything you want to do and the restrictions of being injured. And for a lot of people that have been injured in the past, they'll realise that sometimes you should really appreciate the simple things of being able to run around, hit the ball, bowl as fast as you can without any other problems, without any other things holding you back. The other thing I think we should think about is how we should appreciate when we're back playing well. These things don't happen often. It's not all the time that we pick up a bat and we go out and score 50 or 100. So just as a time when I'm feeling a bit ill, I think appreciate how well things are going. Appreciate how well you're hitting a ball, bowling a ball, throwing a ball, catching a ball, whatever it is. And appreciate being fit as a fiddle rather than picking up the odd injury, which will happen inevitably.
That is not only the end of this show, but in a few moments' time, it's going to be the end of the series. Before we go, we are going to decide on the winner of the competition. So, Gareth, get ready to tell me. We had Rohit's question about which six deliveries he should bowl as an off-spinner, and Mode's question about what is chest drive. So which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go with Mode's chest drive question, actually, this week. I think it was a good one. It doesn't just relate to fast bowling; it also relates to being able to throw the ball hard as well. So it was a good one, and I think we've given a bit of a description around it, and when you would and when you wouldn't necessarily coach it.
Yeah, I quite like those open questions. They may not be that easy to answer, but they also give us scope to talk about pretty much anything we want to. So, you know, an excuse to talk more is good in my book. So congratulations, and congratulations to everyone who won a prize this year. There were 50 winners, of course. And you could have a chance to be one of the 50 winners next year as well. And the way you can do that is by sending your question in to us at the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Gareth, if someone was listening and they knew that after the Christmas and New Year break, they wanted their question answered, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us a line on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. Social media stays open 24/7, of course. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And our Twitter is @PitchVisionAcad. You can also subscribe to the show. You've got plenty of time before the next one, of course. And if you want to do that, you can just go into any podcast app that you like on any device that you have. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in all the main ones there. If you're having trouble finding us, or you want to have a look at the show notes, or you just want to stream the show from the Pitch Vision website, you can do all of those things. Download the original MP3 file as well. You can do all those things by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. You can also subscribe to the RSS feed that way as well. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next year. But until then, have a good Christmas and New Year. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers. And Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year, lads.
Cheers, guys.